Today's episode of Heat Check is brought to you by Microsoft Surface. The new Microsoft Surface Pro 6 can help you get things done, whether you're on the field or running a business. Take Brian Arakpo and Michael Griffin, two former NFL teammates who have opened up a cupcake shop. With the Surface Pro, they can do everything they need, from setting schedules to creating promotions for social media and designing new flavors. Plus, it's light, super fast, and has a great battery life. Brian and Michael are proving that you can tackle all your passions with the power and speed of the new Surface Pro 6.
He's got smoke coming off his fingertips. He's as hot as a blowtorch.
It's a heat check. You knew that was coming. It's heat check time.
Hello and welcome to Heat Check. My name is Chris Ryan. I am not John Gonzalez, who is almost done his European vacation. We'll be hearing a lot from John in the coming weeks. I am here today with my brother, Justin Verrier.
Hey, man.
And we are here to talk about probably the most important story out there, which is the All-Star Game.
I thought this was the watch. I was ready to talk about High Flying Bird.
Yeah, did you watch Umbrella Academy this weekend?
I don't know what that is.
Justin and I are here to do a little bit of All-Star recapping and to talk a little bit about the Ringer's top 25 players after 50-ish games list that just went up on the Ringer today that we both contributed to, we voted in, we wrote blurbs for. Mm-hmm. And then we're also going to talk about the end of the Dell Dempsey era in New Orleans, which is something that Justin has a lot of insight into, because he was a Pelicans beat writer down there in New Orleans.
A lot of time suffering.
You may have seen him in Treme.
In the Treme, yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, in the show, you know, like that.
Oh, yeah.
That, the Pelicans beat writer plot line was one of my favorite Treme plots.
Right. I sing the theme song, too. That's, I don't know if you caught that.
Right. That's right. Let's talk about All-Star a little bit. I've officially aged out of All-Star, I think, in some ways.
Wow.
Well, here's the thing. So my relationship to it is entirely based on the ones that I've gone to, I think.
Oh, so you've been to a few of them.
Yeah. I went to Houston, New Orleans twice, mm-hmm. and New York.
Okay. I've been to two, Houston and New Orleans.
Okay.
In LA this past year.
That's all right. All-Star games should be in New Orleans.
I personally disagree, because I've been there. And when you're in New Orleans and it comes to you, the last thing you want to do is deal with the zoo.
Yeah.
It also coincided with Mardi Gras. Okay. Was that like a good thing for someone who wasn't used to that?
It felt relatively easy to get around, and I enjoyed the lack of restrictions on behavior.
Sure.
I thought it was just a really fun time, and it was the perfect, it was an easy flight from wherever you were coming from, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Houston was okay. I didn't really leave the hotel.
That was before Houston. I visited Houston last year or the year before, and it was before Houston's downtown became much of a thing.
Yeah.
And I remember just kind of wandering around and not really having much direction, but it's a better NBA city.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. And then New York was just too cold.
Yeah, never a cold weather city.
Yeah. So whatever. Look, I think I've just kind of aged out of going in terms of watching it. I think that they were talking about it a little bit on Bill's pod with Ryan. It's for kids. You know what I mean? This is for kids. And we can do a lot of body language reading if we want to, and we can kind of look into this. But I mean, the team LeBron versus team Giannis, and it was actually a pretty exciting last third and fourth. The second half is pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that this is the Disney version of the NBA, where it's everybody's getting autographs and I can't believe Klay Thompson's here. And it's just not, you know.
My thing is,
for hardcore tape heads us.
This is my thing, though. It's it seems like the rest of NBA Twitter would like them to be running slob plays and pick and roll and pick and box.
Ice,
it's
ice.
How much can you really wring your hands over cool dunks and three pointers from half court?
No, I don't care about the actual game itself. It's not, I just feel like it's a lot is made out of a little. It's the circus around it would make it seem like we were going into Super Bowl week and that this game was of a lot of consequence, when in fact it's just it's just fucking fun. It's just a pickup game.
I personally like watching all the players interact.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bill has talked about this in the past. It's almost a window into who's kind of the alpha and how these guys kind of play off of each other.
Yeah.
And I think you got a kind of a glimpse of that in this one, especially from the jump when Giannis was just dunking 10 straight plays in
yes.
a row. And it was kind of oh, he cares. And that seemed to that seemed to align with how I view Giannis, where he's part of the group, but he exists on this other plane just because he wants to kind of
everybody. Like, his goal should be to be better than all of them because he's got the tools, right? Like, and I think that there's a degree to which you want to be like in the crowd and like and be on Team Banana Boat and just be like, oh, like what if we were all free agents? But like, I think that his goal should be to like, I'm going to be the meteor that knocks LeBron out of existence here.
Yeah, and he leaned into that. And I thought it was really interesting how he and Steph played off of each other too.
Yeah.
And both of them are kind of on the fringes of that whole discussion. Whereas Kyrie and Kevin Durant pretty much spent the entire time like playing footsie with each other.
Right. And so that's the specific thing about this year's All-Star was that it was kind of this window into the imagined life of NBA players, right?
Sure.
Like, because this year specifically with the Anthony Davis trade request, with the Lakers cratering, with Kyrie Irving saying that he's not sure if he's going to re-sign with the Lake or the Celtics, that he'll make up his mind in July, with the Kevin Durant free agency talk only heating up when he said he didn't want to talk about it. We went into this All-Star weekend, I think, looking for a lot of clues. And, you know, obviously, like, I think the eyeball emoji might have hit its all-time highest usage rate last night on Twitter. Do you take any of it seriously, or do you think that it's just a bunch of guys hanging out having a good time in Charlotte over the weekend?
Have you ever taken a Myers-Briggs test?
No, I had a girlfriend in high school who did, though.
Okay, I took one a few years ago, and I was like an INFJ, right?
So what does that stand for?
I don't know. It just meant that I was like super introverted, which is like, all right, cool. But the description of it, I don't remember most of it, but it was like, you're usually right and you don't know why. Uh-huh. Like, you can't come to the conclusion of why you're right, but you just have like a feeling.
The INFJs are.
Yes.
Okay.
And I took that to mean that I'm always right, which as someone who has to deal with me on a daily basis, I'm sure makes it really easy for you. and I just, I tend to put a lot of stock in that.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the way Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving were kind of playing off each other. I think we're at the point where they're basically gone.
So you think this is Beijing all over again?
Yes.
This is like, the deal is done. These guys have made the deal with each other. They're going to go to New York, play in the Knicks together.
They were spending a lot of time on the court together.
Okay, but like, what would happen if Kevin Durant was like hanging out with Jokic?
They'd probably have a good time. Jokic seems like a great hang. Did you watch him
in
that game?
Yeah, it totally does.
A lot of like weird passes. It seems like both he and Luka have that same thing where they just want to fuck around the whole time.
Yeah.
Whereas like certain guys take it really seriously, but they're just like, I'm just.
Just say it. Just say Westbrook.
Yeah, Westbrook.
Here's my thing about this. I heard Bill kind of going in on Westbrook last night. I'm going to pull the stats up. I can't believe I'm pulling up the fucking box score for the All-Star game.
I couldn't
even
find it.
All right, I dialed up the box score for the All-Star game. Now, everybody was killing Westbrook because he went 8 for 20.
It's pretty good.
It's like a normal NBA night. But people were killing Westbrook, and Bill was talking about his plus-minus, and everybody was just like, Russ, look at Russ be such a corn dog because he cares. He's trying to, like, he shot, like, Team Giannis out of the game. But no disrespect, but Steph went 6 for 23.
Wasn't great.
And everybody's just like, Steph's amazing! I love him so much, he's so adorable! He threw himself an alley-oop at the end, Charlotte is his city!
Yeah.
But like, this is all it goes to say, you can read anything you want into the All-Star game. You can see it, and you can see Kevin and Kyrie playing footsie, and you're just like, oh, well, that's a wrap. They're going to play together. And every time LeBron and Anthony Davis, like, bump fists, like, we're like, well, that's a wrap. That he's getting traded to the Lakers or whatever.
So it's a Rorschach?
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, you're talking about Myers-Briggs. This is, it's its own psychological test. What do you take from the All-Star game?
Yeah, but I think this is also the first time we really get to see in a season, like, extended time of these guys interacting with each other. They might see each other in passing, but it's often just like a fist bump right before the game, and then like them whispering after a game, like, go to this club, we're going to hang out.
Yeah.
And so we don't really ever get a window into that, and we're probably reading too much into it, but that's the fun stuff, no?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that the NBA drama is something that I think has consumed us over the last few weeks. We've been doing these back and forths on the website called Rational Conversations. And we've done them about Jimmy Butler and Anthony Davis. But I think that the personality, I think we've talked also about whether or not the personality off-court stuff has a chance of eclipsing the on-court stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be interesting to see, because typically what happens in the second half of the season is you have a few too many teams cut bait and start tanking. And then there's like a lot of resting going on at the top of the table so that people can kind of get ready for the playoffs. But typically what happens then is that you've got a lot of guys resting towards the top of the table, get ready for the postseason run. I don't know if there's a vacuum there, we're going to fill it with more speculation. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So, well, on the other hand, I feel like the person who is resting for most of this game will give us plenty of it going forward. I mean, I know you want to talk about the Pelicans in the second half.
We can talk about Davis now,
yeah,
and then we can talk about the Pelicans later. So AD's made some choices over the last few days. You want to sort of like recap them? Like,
it's going to be a tough one. So if you want to go all the way back, he obviously asked for a trade demand.
Anthony Davis was born on Krypton. This is sent to our Earth.
I don't know if you heard this, but he had a massive growth spurt in high school. Yeah. No, but he had a trade demand. Everything basically fell apart and while he was just watching from the sidelines. They didn't play leading up to the trade deadline. Since then, there's kind of been like I don't know, it's basically a pissing contest is what it's devolved into in New Orleans, where they're playing him, but they're not playing him full games. And there was talk about maybe not playing him back-to-backs, though I think he did that. And then right before All-Star break, he seemed to get injured by launching himself into New Orleans Noel going for a shot
contest. Kentucky on Kentucky violence.
Which, we could circle back to that, because I don't know how legit that was to begin with. I don't know how deep this hole goes. And then was seen sometime around halftime leaving the stadium with Rich Paul.
Who, as Bill gleefully pointed out, was sitting courtside at the All-Star game.
Right. And then flash forward to the All-Star game, like the days before, they all do media.
Mm-hmm.
And in which Anthony Davis both said that the Celtics are on his list and that all 29 teams are on his list and that he was going to say goodbye in the right way, which meant that he was going to put a nice Instagram photo up.
Now, Justin's not being facetious. He actually said, I will do something special for the people of New Orleans, like post an Instagram.
I think what we've learned about young Anthony Davis is he has no idea what he's doing.
I don't think I agree with you.
Yeah.
And this is what's really cool about this whole story as somebody who's not emotionally involved in it, other than not necessarily wanting the Lakers to get what they want, mm-hmm. is the way that different kind of entities are trying to control the situation, be it Rich Paul, be it the NBA, be it the Pelicans, be it the Lakers. And then what happens when Davis has a hot mic?
Yeah, I thought Russillo put it really well, and it's just that Davis is super impressionable.
Mm-hmm.
That's always been my like assumption of him, just in my limited time with him, is that he is at his core just like a really no-nonsense type of dude, but will be pulled in different directions based on who's pulling him.
Right.
And I think you're seeing that. And then when we got to the actual game, all of a sudden he was healthy enough to play, but then he only played 5 minutes. And now we're at the point where he doesn't get the benefit of a doubt. So he very well could have injured. I don't even know what it was. Maybe like
It was like a shoulder contusion, which is essentially like I bruised my shoulder dropping it into Nerlens Noel's chest.
Right. Which also, I don't even know if that makes sense given his trajectory into Noel, because he was like, it was almost like he hit his armpit into his face.
There's just there's a vacuum right now and Rich Paul's filling it. So I think that there is not a strong, as we're going to get to later in the show, there is not a particularly strong leadership at the Pelicans right now, or at least it's unclear who's calling the shots. And because of that, Rich Paul's taking control of what Anthony Davis does on a day-to-day basis, probably. You know, like he's making the decision that maybe they didn't want him to play. He played and got quote-unquote hurt, and to prove the point or out of frustration, left the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe that's what people do all the time when they twist ankles or hurt shoulders or tweak wrists and stuff like that. But the reality is that there's going to be a camera on Anthony Davis every single day asking him a variation on the same question until the end of the season.
Right. And I don't know, in Anthony Davis' defense, if they do have an MRI machine in that arena. At least they didn't the last time I was there. So he would have had to go somewhere
else. And he wants to leave New Orleans, you're telling me.
Right. But I also wouldn't doubt it. And based on the way it looked like on that brief shot of them walking out, was that they were just taking a car.
They knew cameras were on them.
Yeah. In fact, like the security guard even like tried to shoo the camera away. So clearly they must have seen some sort of action as they were walking out. I mean, you walk out with Rich Paul in that scenario when Paul is basically radioactive to all the people around there in New Orleans. Like you have to know how that's going to be perceived.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of what's for real and what's for show here. So there was the rumor that the NBA was threatening the Pelicans with a $100,000 per game fine or $50,000 per game fine.
That was the rumor, yeah.
If they held Anthony Davis out. So now they're in a situation where their star player doesn't want to be there. The NBA doesn't want him to sit them. He's going to do stuff. If he's apparently putting this stuff in play where he's like, I'll play 5 minutes or I'll score 4 points or I will, you know, pull myself out of the stadium. We've got like a team there that's trying to figure out what to do. I think it would probably be best for everyone involved if he just, they put him in cotton balls, but we're also like, stay away from the team. You know what I mean? Like,
agreed. Yeah.
Like, you don't want to be here, don't be here. That was, that's like, I love the Kevin Garnett, like, if you're in street clothes, you don't exist kind of thing. And I think that that's probably for the best. And that way also, he's not getting hounded by cameras and people with tape recorders asking him what his plans are.
Yeah. I mean, if Rich Paul is the one like pulling the strings here, his first priority should be to never put Anthony Davis in front of a live mic again, because I don't think he's doing himself any favors. But it does seem like Davis, based on everything that's happened thus far, is just only further entrenching himself. Like, he's just doubling down to where he's made his desires known to get out of there. And instead of kind of, he's saying that he's willing to go along, get along, and keep playing and do his best for the team. But everything that he is now saying and doing suggests otherwise.
I just still don't understand. I mean, obviously the trade demand was made to entice or trigger a Lakers trade this season. So I think we can safely assume that. It didn't work out. Now they're in this limbo. I think in retrospect, maybe they would have tried to kind of do some back channel feeling out of like what the Pelicans would need. And then they could have just made this trade request formally at the end of the season and got this done perhaps after the lottery when we know what the Knicks have or whatever. But now it's become, in some ways you could say almost more of an insult to the Pelicans by him saying, my list is 29 other teams, which is what he said, you know, and that like he basically doesn't have any no-goes. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean he will resign with 29 other teams. I just think he's not objecting to being traded to basically anywhere.
Right. And you've seen the Pelicans respond in kind words to the point where they're willing to play hardball just as much now. Mm-hmm. They get rid of Dell Demps, and all of a sudden you bring in Danny Ferry, a guy who's a little bit more, probably has more of a broad outlook on the situation. He wasn't as close to some of the fiasco that involved there just because he was more of a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
So I do wonder if the message from up top is, well, F him.
Yeah.
Like, how does this get any better?
Right. Because
that's basically the line that they drew just by getting rid of Dell.
So let's do the Pelicans now. Let's talk about them. So we've got Anthony Davis, who he's made this formal trade request, which has now had some edits, but is still basically standing. The current state of play in the New Orleans Pelicans is on Friday, I believe. They got rid of their long-serving general manager, Dell Demps.
Right, who survived the previous ownership as well. So he was carried over from the previous ownership.
And I thought that when we talked about, we had a rational conversation on the site about Anthony Davis right around when the trade demand was sort of made. You gave me a really nuanced impression of Demps. You know, I mean, I think that it's easy to be like, this guy's an idiot or this guy's a genius with GMs. We're really binary with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that your description of Demps was really interesting, both in terms of how stubborn he was and how close to the vest he plays it, but also how, like, in some ways, savvy he has been, like, getting a guy like Ferry, who, regardless of what you think of him, as a distressed kind of executive asset, was probably a good move because you bring a guy in who's got that kind of experience, but you have him at basically a consultant salary.
Yeah, I think you saw the way his unique situation kind of played out on him. I think he was a headstrong guy to begin with, but he really didn't have much oversight, so everything kind of stopped at him.
Mm-hmm.
There's been much like kind of discussion about like what role Mickey Loomis played in there, and I think
in terms of bringing in Ferry or in terms of the exit of Demps,
or just like how much oversight he had over Dell to
right.
begin with, because, as has been discussed, Mickey Loomis is the Saints GM.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding is that job kind of comes first. And so he would often play it both ways, Mickey, where he would say, well, it's basically Dell's show, not to make sure that like he didn't seem like he was interfering with what Dell was doing. And yet you also heard that he had final say.
Mm-hmm.
So there was always they always try to kind of play things both ways. And I think it doesn't often serve them all that well. But pretty much all to say that the buck stopped with Dell, and I think it almost leaned into some of his worst habits.
Sure.
I often heard when I was down there that he preached like accountability, but when it came down to it, he would never practice it.
Right.
And I tweeted that out, I think, Friday after he got let go, and I heard from like several people in that organization, like, yeah, that's 100% right.
Okay.
And that's just kind of that's the kind of thing that infected the whole situation. I think when people kind of rib the Pelicans, I think there are a lot of people there that think like, well, you just think we're dumb people that just don't know what we're doing. But if anything, I would say it's a lot of good people often put in difficult situations because of the way the ownership works there.
Mm-hmm. So how would you describe how the ownership works? Well, I guess it's... That's a huge question because it's changed.
It's a huge unknown. And that's why I'm kind of giving Gail Benson some slack here, because while the reports and things that I had heard that like she kind of pushed Tom, her husband, to purchase the Pelicans when they got out from NBA ownership, I don't really know what to make of her. But based on her like her moves over the past couple of weeks here, and she's had the team for now a year, I think like I kind of agree with everything that she's done. Mm-hmm. She's taken the hardline stance against Davis, and it feels like you don't want to get pushed around by agencies, which like a lot of franchises have issues with. I mean, there were rumors for a while that the Bucks, for instance, were controlled by whatever one that
it was kid's agent, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And you don't want to get pushed around.
Yeah, you could see
by the NBA.
Look
itself.
Up and down any NBA roster or a lot of NBA rosters, and then cross-reference that with certain agents' player rosters, and you will see certain teams that over the years have had definite like influences by an agent, you know.
For instance, the Lakers and Clutch Sports.
Right. Or in the past, like Dan Fagan, the late Dan Fagan had a strong relationship with Mark Cuban. I mean, you can find these sort of overlaps anywhere.
So I think it's fair to wonder what Gail's like approach will be, because I don't think she's ever been put in this position, and the Saints hierarchy is kind of established, and it's been carried over for years. If anything, Tom Benson was known for like not getting rid of people when they might have should have been, because
Bountygate. Well, and, I mean, like that. I mean, I was kind of wondering about that. Obviously, it's in no way the two situations aren't comparable, but in terms of when do you cut bait with who in your organization based on public perception is an interesting question.
Yeah, and I mean, like we said before, they carried over Del Demps from the previous regime. They pretty much just held like that entire front office structure in place and put their own executives over the top of them. So they really haven't done much. So I think we should like almost wait to criticize how she goes about things until she's actually making the decisions, and we'll figure that out over the next year or two. And now if those don't work out, then we could safely say that like they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. You know, I often wonder with those teams that are kind of geographically on the line between the conferences, the Memphis, Minnesota, New Orleans line, which is not like a perfect geographic line, but mm-hmm. it's loosely like the middle of the country. Like, just what would have happened if there had ever been conference realignment at any point for those teams, because they are all pretty good at various points in the last 10 years, you know, maybe not Minnesota, but even with the Kevin Love time, like there were a couple of good teams there that got crushed by Kevin Love injuries or whatever. But for New Orleans, this has been a pretty decent team. Mm-hmm. You know, they've had a lot of bad luck with injuries. They went all in on Boogie, but in retrospect, it's like, did they know, like, would Buddy be Buddy in New Orleans ever? I don't know.
Probably not.
And this is a team that like did what they could with what they had, I guess. And obviously just happened to play in a conference where there's three or four perennially dominant teams.
Yeah, and the excuse you'd always hear from within that front office is if they played in the East, which like they're in the central time zone, so maybe theoretically they probably should. Mm-hmm. They would probably make the playoffs throughout this entire run. That they had a lot of injuries, although that gets pretty dicey because, as we've talked in the past, their injury history hasn't been all that good.
Case in point, Eric Gordon, you know, right. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and so they're, it's not that their blueprint wasn't without thought. It was just constantly rushed and rash. And
yes.
There's always been, I mean, you could talk to anybody there and they'll tell you two different things. It's basically, was it the ownership pushing to make sure that they had a viable product to sell to the market immediately? Or was this just Dell's kind of approach to begin with, because his basic blueprint was to put a bunch of what people would call young veterans around AD. It's basically the Ben Simmons mm-hmm. thing where AD showed after his rookie season that he was ready to run now, and they put a bunch of guys of similar age who could grow alongside with him. Now, the problem was it didn't work out as well as they'd hoped, and by the time they got to the point where they found out it didn't work, all those guys kind of left. So Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson just walked in free agency for nothing.
Sure. Yeah, and you just don't get anything coming back. All right, so Ferry's there now. There's been rumors of David Griffin. There's been, you know, I mean, even far out rumors, like not rumors, but basically like people suggesting it should be something like Hinkie. Where do you think this organization goes next? And what do you get the feeling like the next steps are in terms of handling this Davis thing? Do you think they eventually like go to like do they basically need Silver to come in and mediate this thing and figure out like what we're going to do with Anthony Davis for the second half of the season?
Yeah, I think they made the right moves to begin with to install Ferry in there. And now the Ferry situation is pretty complicated.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously left under like really ugly terms in Atlanta. Although not to be the one like just kind of, because I don't know whether or not he was reading up. So it basically boiled down to he said he was reading off a piece of paper that had some pretty awful things to say about Luol Deng.
Mm-hmm.
But who's to know, like, was he actually saying that or was he reading off? There's always that unknown. But I would just recommend that everybody read the story that Kevin Arnovitz and Brian Windhorst did about that entire situation
that
to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was, it basically laid out how it wasn't so clear cut, that there were some animosity amongst the ownership group there, that there's this one guy named Michael Guerin who wanted to essentially push Ferry out. And mm-hmm. this was the reason he found for him. And that's how that regime kind of fell. So, but I would say in my experiences dealing with Danny, I've always found him to be like super bright. And what I wrote in that rational conversation that we did was, Dell made a good move of getting Ferry into the organization because it provided them a steady hand mm-hmm. for a consultant fee. But essentially, as soon as he got there, everybody kind of gravitated toward Danny and realized that he was like the smartest, like sharpest guy in the room. And so now I don't know if it's the best approach to keep Danny there because of the optics. But at the very least, I think they're stable for now. I think like things will kind of go as planned. And I think the first step is basically to tell Anthony Davis to go away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that would do to the NBA and like the friction that exists already between the league and the Pelicans organization, just based on what Davis Stern said about Dell Demps about, he was basically like, he's a terrible GM. So I would hope that they come to some resolution and see that this is helping no one.
Right.
And I think based on all of like, maybe like the media backlash that you've been seeing, that will happen. And then from there, settle on some sort of steward of the franchise. And it seems like they're on a good path because Gail Benson said in a statement that it's no longer going to be bypassed through Mickey Loomis. Whoever is hired is going to answer straight to her.
Yeah, there was some, I saw some writing over the weekend being like, that's good on paper. Let's see it in practice.
Sure.
You know,
because it's not just the Saints that are under that hierarchy.
Right.
Like Greg Bensel, who is their like PR chief there, like runs like their horse operation, like their thoroughbred horses.
It's a family business.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
More broadly speaking, as someone who spent time down there, and I think it's easy for me to be a dick and watch a game and be like, if I were Anthony Davis, I wouldn't want to play in a sparsely populated gym either. Like I want my games to matter and I want to feel like I matter, especially as I'm in my prime and I am injury prone. And like, I think Davis maybe more acutely than say like a LeBron feels like the sort of impermanence of basketball. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I think that he's not a superhuman. Like that's a guy who every time he hits the deck, you're kind of like, is this guy going to get up? You know, for the Pelicans, what's the ceiling there? Like what could be done differently in New Orleans to basically make NBA basketball even just appear more viable?
I would say to take the long view. I mean, that was the biggest criticism of what they did throughout. I mean, they were gifted the best raw resource in the past, I don't know, decade. Like if we're talking about just prospects over the past 10, 20 years, it's LeBron, AD, and perhaps Zion,
mm-hmm.
and maybe Luka. I don't know if you want to throw him in there. The problem was they just rushed the process in order to make it viable. And now I get why they would do that because we talk all the time how difficult that market is. I mean, it's in the South. There's a lot of football fans. They won't probably gravitate toward...
Half their season is during Saints season. Yeah.
Right. And they probably won't gravitate toward that product unless there's something there to witness. Now, when I first got there, I saw signs that that would take hold if they just like had a consistent winner. But again, they were constantly trying to win that season. And I think they need to be looking long-term. I think this needs to be a 5-year, 10-year plan, which is like, it seems like they're on that path because a lot of the prospects that have been discussed as possibly going there are guys that they would have team control for like two contracts and they're young enough to where they're not rookies, but they can at the very least sell hope there. And like, honestly, Drew Holiday's pretty good. If you want to keep him around, I think you could reboot.
He's also
like
an excellent asset. You know, right. In this day and age, I mean, like you could figure out some place to send Drew Holiday and get some stuff back in return.
Right. And I do think the one unintended consequence of all this AD stuff is it's almost like galvanized the fan base in weird ways.
Mm-hmm.
I almost think it's like the wrestling tactic where it's just like maybe you weren't getting them in because the product was so nice and like fun to see. But now they're like fuck this guy. Like this is our team versus Davis. And I do wonder, as soon as Davis goes, maybe there's that whole sort of thing.
Let me give you my read on it, and you let me know if it's bullshit or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dems tried to build the Spurs without the rings. Like, I think he saw a Duncan figure in Davis, a guy that you could have for 15 years and just be like, we have like a baseline of like excellence here because this guy will only ever let us be this bad. And that around him, we can try and just basically find our Manu, our Tony, you know, like our guys who maybe, because Davis is going to keep us in that mid-lottery and above zone, we're gonna just add dudes like Drew and Mirotić and like those kinds of trades to kind of be decent and think that Davis is so transcendent, he's just going to get us over the hump. But they didn't have Popovich, and they don't have the culture of winning that San Antonio does that kind of transcends market. Also, to say nothing of the fact that people are crazy about the Spurs in San Antonio, almost the way that people are crazy about LSU football there, you know what I mean, and the Saints. And there was not enough flexibility, basically. And then once they started getting flexible, once they started doing things like boogie trades, it was too late.
I've actually heard the specific criticism from someone there being like, Pop would be the type of person who would be held accountable for his own like failures. He would be the first person to say, that was my bad.
Yeah.
And I mean, he essentially did that with LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah.
And then I guess he tried to at certain times with Kawhi. But no, I think that's, in the broad sense, I think that's right. I think Dell was at his best working the fringes. I do think he struggled on some of the bigger moves. Like even Drew, who was really good for them, and I love him as a player and think he's been really good. They gave up 2 lottery picks. Do you really need to give up 2?
Yeah.
You gave up a lottery pick for Oshik because you got rid of Robin Lopez to sign Tyreke Evans. It all kind of goes hand in hand. And so ultimately... Yes, but his whole job is to cover all that stuff.
Right. Do you think a team that's about as good as, say, let's say that the ceiling for the Pelicans after Anthony Davis is like the Pacers? Let's just put like around that. Mm-hmm. Pacers are quite good this year, but a typical Pacers 5-7 seed, is that enough to keep New Orleans fans interested? Mediocrity without the drama, let's say.
Maybe my guess would be no, but I think the easiest comp are the Grizzlies.
Okay.
Just because the market is like right there, and I think they're 2 of the smallest markets in the league, if not the 2 smallest. And then the Grizzlies were super competitive. They only made it to 1 conference finals.
They also told a story though.
Exactly. They had one of the best like branding in like recent NBA history.
Absolutely.
To the point where like people in the NBA are all like, how did you do that? Like, tell us how you like marketed this team, because it just fit the vibe of the city so well. And I think if they had something like that, then perhaps, which is why...
It was probably one of the most distinctive... There's like Lob City, but Grit and Grind is one of the most distinctive like branding exercises since Showtime.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say Showtime, because it fits the like just the demographics or just like the general sense you have of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I thought Boogie was pretty huge for them. Because New Orleans is similar, where like there's almost that like stripped down snarl that they kind of appreciate. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at Alvin Kamara as a guy that they all love.
Yeah.
And I feel like Boogie has a lot of those same personality quirks.
Yeah.
And instantly when Boogie got there, he just took off. I think he was probably not a bigger deal than AD, but I think they saw something in Boogie that they didn't see in AD.
Mm-hmm.
AD, you kind of appreciate almost as if he's like a crystal vase, because he's just like everything he does is so like great.
But there was obviously something institutional that happened with the relationship with Boogie. I mean, obviously the Achilles was devastating for both parties in some ways because it was going to change his value.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's any love lost between Boogie and the people at the Pelicans.
Right. And that's the other side of Boogie, is that like he takes things very personal. And then it sounded like, based on the reporting, that they had come to some sort of agreement before the Achilles tear, or at least they discussed
wink,
some stuff.
Wink, kind of thing.
Yeah, but then after it happened, they kind of like slow played it, and that was enough for Boogie to be like, fuck you.
Because
those sorts of like gray areas, he does not work well in.
Right. Okay. We're going to take a break to hear from our sponsor, and when Justin and I come back, we're going to talk about our top 25 ranking that we have on the site today, but we're going to do it kind of through the lens of all the off-court drama that we're talking about. Today's episode of Heat Check is brought to you by Desus and Mero, the all-new weekly late-night talk show that's available now on Showtime. Tune in to watch the Bronx's own Desus Nice and Kid Mero bring their illustrious take on current events, politics, sports, and pop culture, all while talking spicy with the week's hottest celebrity guests. Quick-witted and fun, the duo will riff off the cuff and get the Twitter sphere buzzing. New episodes of Desus and Mero drop every Thursday at 11 p.m. only on Showtime. Today's episode of Heat Check is also brought to you by Hulu. Hulu's paying some of the league's best players a lot of money to do some pretty crazy stuff. Joel changed his nickname from The Process to Joel Hulu Has Live Sports Embiid. Damian Lillard got a tattoo that says Hulu Has Live Sports. Clearly, they really want you to know that Hulu has live sports. Hulu Plus Live TV offers 60-plus live and on-demand channels, tons of shows and movies, and exclusive originals. So get rid of cable and switch to Hulu Plus Live TV for only $45 a month. Watch your favorite teams and the biggest games all season with no cable required. Watch on the go on all your favorite devices. Restrictions apply. Learn more at Hulu.com. Today's episode of Heat Check is brought to you by ADT Real Protection. When it comes to something as important as your family's safety, you deserve real protection from ADT. Real Protection means the nation's number one smart home security provider is standing by and there for you when you need them. Real Protection means having a safe and smart home with everything from video doorbells, surveillance cameras, smart locks, lights, carbon monoxide, and smoke detectors in a system that's custom designed to fit your lifestyle. And setting up custom automations to do things like lock the doors and set the thermostat when you leave. Real Protection means staying safe on the go, in the car, when your kids are at school with the ADT Go app and SOS button. Real Protection means 18,000 employees safeguarding you. Real Protection means direct connections with first responders. No matter how you define safety for you, your family, or your business, ADT is there. ADT Real Protection. Visit ADT.com/podcast to learn more about how ADT can design and install a secure smart home just for you. All right, Justin, we're back. It's Heat Check. We're talking about the Ringer's top 25 players of the first 60-ish games. We did this after 25 games, right? And the fascinating thing about this list this time that I wanted to ask you about was I wanted to know, because I think it came up a couple of times in my blurbs, how much did the off-court shit that's been happening over the last few weeks or months impact how you voted in this list?
Well, we were just talking about Anthony Davis, and he's a guy that I consciously dropped to the bottom of like an elite tier. So I think he ended up at 12 for me because of everything that he was doing. And then he's also just missing games as a result of all of this. He missed, I think, two right before the deadline, and he's barely playing in some of them. And at a certain point, that has to add up, no?
Yeah, I mean, it's a holistic thing. It's right. we weren't saying we could just publish the stat lines and like some advanced numbers if we wanted to say, well, like statistically, this person is the best player in the NBA and this is the third or this is the fifth or whatever, depending on what you value. But NBA players teach us how to watch the game and they teach us what to think is important. And I think that right now, all this volatility is what's important. And it's not media people who are making, like, who are feasting on it. Yeah, like, they're totally, like, bullshit stories that people get really worked up about because somebody accidentally is like, New York seems nice, and, like, maybe we lose our minds for a week. But this isn't bullshit. Like, yeah. This is actually happening. People are actually, like, challenging the paradigm of whether or not a contract needs to be fulfilled. I support, in theory, the players saying, if we're allowed to get traded, we're also allowed to advocate for being traded.
Right.
That's that. I think that's fair enough.
100%.
I do think that it kind of like undoes the idea of like what you're saying, like they need a 5 or 10 year plan in New Orleans. I don't know how you do that if players can decide in the middle of a contract or with a year and a half remaining on a contract that they're not interested in that plan. But that being said, I'm all for like turnabout is fair play. If we can get dealt, if Blake Griffin can get like seduced into signing, re-signing with the Clippers, and then months later get traded to Detroit, which he would not have chosen to go to as a free agent, right, then I think it's just fine if Anthony Davis is like, I do not want to play here for another year and a half and possibly blow a knee out in ninth place in the Western Conference.
Did you vote for Butler this time around?
I did.
Okay. See, I didn't, which is funny because he showed up at 18 in our previous list, which was immediately after everything in Minnesota. But not this one.
Yes.
Perhaps there was just recency bias because we knew who made the All-Star team and who didn't.
Yeah, I also think that once you get towards the end of the list, there's a lot of like recency bias, like who have you watched recently? I watched too much Butler, you know. Yeah. Like I forget about Chris Middleton because I don't watch enough like the Bucks every night the way I do the Philly.
It's not a huge sample. So like if one voter had him higher than most,
exactly,
like, perhaps that swung things.
Yeah. Yeah, but I agree with you. You were like Davis dropped and he's at ninth on our list after placing fifth in the previous list. And I think he's probably like a little low on the first list. Like I thought he was that good. But for him to drop to ninth, I think that obviously that off-court stuff affected it. It affected the most interesting debate, and it's not one that we actually have a lot because I think everybody's just got Warriors fatigue, but the most interesting thing that happened on this list was that Kevin Durant and Steph Curry tied.
Right.
And now Steph is ranked fourth, correct?
Right.
Yeah, and he moves up from eighth, and Durant is five. He was always at five. Now, what happened with the vote?
So basically, they tied Zach Cram, who kind of crunched the numbers for us, basically removed the top and lowest votes for each.
Right.
And that's how we separated the tie.
Okay, so I wrote about Kevin Durant. I really think he's just about one of the five or six best players I've ever seen in my life. So this is not like, are we sure he's good? This is literally like just such a fascinating situation, though, with Curry engenders so much goodwill and so much joy. Like, we were talking about this with the All-Star thing. Curry goes 6 for 23 in the All-Star game. People are like, Steph's having a blast out there. And Russ goes 8 for 23. And people are like, Russ is ruining this game.
Right.
Kevin Durant was friggin' awesome last night, won the MVP, and like we come out of it and it was like that was Steph's game and that was like great LeBron hanging on to like the top of the mountain there. And I do think that for as much as Kevin Durant is like, shut up and hoop, you guys don't want to talk about basketball, I just want to talk about basketball, all this crap is kind of like clouded it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, because the difference is Steph isn't the one yelling to shut up and talk about basketball.
Right.
That's a huge difference. And like the other thing is, I thought last night that was the crystallization, as people kind of noted on Twitter, of their whole relationship. Whereas KD, and I wrote this in my blurb, is basically the consistent one.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Steph is the one that fluctuates, but his peaks are so much higher.
Right.
The stat I had in this was that KD had only 4 games under 20 points this season, whereas Curry's has 8. And yeah. But Curry has 7 games of 40 points or more. Durant has 4.
Yeah.
And what are we going to remember?
But Durant also carried a Warriors team that was essentially like him, Dre, an off Clay, and some G League guys while Steph was out in November.
And he's also won the past 2 finals MVP.
I know.
Even when last year we were like, this is Steph's year. He had that one big game and then he had that one dud.
Yeah.
And if you look back on their, when they didn't win the finals, a lot of that is because of Steph and like, yeah, maybe some of that was injury induced, but he has a tendency to go fluctuate.
Yes. Yeah. So, now, punitive, I'm not trying to be punitive about Kevin Durant's upcoming free agency. I don't care if he stays with the Warriors or not. I actually think it would be better for basketball if he left. Yeah. I think a wider dispersal of talent is probably needed at this point. Like we've gone through about, 10 years of super teams, right?
Probably. 2010?
Yeah. Like, We're almost at 10 years of super teams, you know.
Doing this way too long.
And I think we could probably handle like a couple more bucks, you know, a couple more teams where it's like, they've got like this really great player that they're building around. And does that lead to more Pelicans teams? Possibly.
Well, does anybody want to watch the Bucks? This is the debate when it comes down to it. Everyone right. says they want the Bucks, but do you really want the fucking Bucks?
That's a great question, man. I don't know. I mean, I have a super team now. I'm cheering for a super team now. And it's harrowing because there's a lot of personalities at play, but the basketball is pretty good.
Sure. I don't know. I only root for the storylines, only to like keep things fresh every couple of years. So when LeBron went back to Cleveland, it's like, all right, we don't have to keep like hammering over whether or not like Josh McRoberts was going to be the key to this next Heat finals team.
Yeah, yeah.
And then now we have the Lakers. It's just, I don't know, it's fantasy basketball at this point, or like NBA 2K, you just put the star in a different jersey and go for it.
Isaac, do you want the Bucks?
Do I want the Bucks?
Do you want an NBA full of 1 to 2 star teams, like Giannis, Chris Middleton style?
I think those are appealing if we had 32 teams. Those would be teams that I would pay attention to if there was a slightly bigger league with half the league making the playoffs. And I think there'll be enough room for maybe one more of those teams. I will say that the super teams have been fun. They've driven storylines. We've seen it, obviously, at the Ringer. We can write stories about super teams.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really interesting question.
We gravitate toward the stars.
But that being said, it's not like Kevin Durant's going to Orlando to play by himself.
Although,
he would probably be going to New York with 2 other max players.
The rumor before he went to Golden State was always that like, oh, he actually doesn't want to be that guy. He doesn't want to go to a big city. He doesn't want the limelight. Like he wants to go to Orlando because they have a tax cut and maybe he'll go play with Al Horford. I remember the Pelicans like...
that was a rumor?
That was a thing for a while to the point where the Pelicans had like a really quiet plan of like, oh man, if he wants to just go play with like a star in a small market and disappear, like, would he want to like play with Anthony Davis?
I just think it's inscrutable. It's like it was, remember there was like all the Wizard stuff and like the Wizards were hiring like friends of his and stuff. And it was right. just like, then he was like flat out, like, I don't want to go home.
Right.
You know?
If anything, I wonder if the market correction over the past couple of years has just been like, there's more information, so a lot of these teams just don't look dumb.
Yeah.
Because you look at the Knicks, they ended up with Amari, and the Wizards ended up with Jan Mahimny and Andrew Nicholson. So perhaps this is just actually for the best for the rest of the league, right, that they know not to get into these derbies to begin with.
Yeah, that's true. Now, another player who dropped significantly, I think, from the last one was LeBron James, who was ranked number 4 after 25 games and is down at 10. Mm. You know, Chow pointed out in his, Danny wrote his blurb and he was like, are we supposed to grade the greatest player of the past 2 generations on a curve?
Right. Which, yes.
I definitely feel like, yes, the 6-week absence came into play. I don't think he's healthy. / I think he's dogging it a little bit to send certain messages. You know, he is still capable of being the best player on the planet. I just don't know that he is bringing it every night and bringing it all game the way I think we should be rewarding people like Paul George, James Harden, and Giannis, who is top ranked after both 25 and 50-ish games. Those guys are in a zone right now that I don't think that's the kind of thing that needs to be rewarded, is when you go out there every night and you are the best player on the floor.
What I thought was really interesting is where Kawhi landed. He's 2 spots ahead of LeBron, and I believe they've missed, if not the same amount of games, just about the same amount. And so we knock LeBron because he's constantly in our face about him missing games or the Lakers missing games without him. Whereas Kawhi, like, he kind of disappears just both based on his personality and because the Raptors, I think we've put them on auto.
He's not playing back-to-backs, which people are starting to take shots at him about, you know? Yeah,
but the statistical production is pretty similar. Now, the Raptors are really good, so maybe that is what accounts for it too. But like, in terms of like raw numbers about their personal contributions, they're pretty similar. Even the net rating, Kawhi's at a 5.5, which isn't like over the moon. LeBron's at 2.5.
Right.
So I don't know. I just think it shows how our biases kind of show up, or at the very least, like prominence, like how much that factors into what we do.
Yeah, and I think the same thing happened when I had Paul George number 1, I think.
Really?
Yeah. And I kind of was just, I think that this February especially, but since 2019 turned over, I think he's been the best player in the NBA.
He was fucking good last night.
He was good last night. I mean, he's...
You went at Harden doing the Harden.
It's sort of wild to watch how he is filling the Durant role, but how it's changed Westbrook a little bit. If you watch Thunder games, like the impact he's had, and Westbrook is like starting to believe, I think.
Yeah, I feel like 2 things. I think that maybe Westbrook appreciates him more because he's seen life without like this sort of dominant wing scorer.
Right.
There's something just like really that sparks joy in between the two of them. They're even hanging out at All-Star Weekend. Like, I think we mostly correctly kind of ding Russ for some of the things that he does on the court.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really fascinating that he's like never had a teammate come out against him and say that he's like a bad dude or a bad teammate.
Right.
And this is like the Sterling example. He was throwing lobs to Diallo in the dunk contest.
Yeah.
I think that's something that we always forget about Russ. I think it's an important like plot point in saying. But also, I think George is probably an elite defender, whereas Durant was still trying to tap into himself as a defender. He was mostly an ISO scorer. He had the body size, but he kind of left that to other players.
Yeah, there was a couple of cool moments last night. I mean, it wasn't like it was a defensive showdown, but you could tell when they started playing defense in the fourth quarter because George was getting like low in his stance. Like he was getting into like Terminator mode for defense. I don't even know if he actually stopped anybody, but... he's been my favorite player to watch over the last couple of months, and I allowed like that to jump in there. Was there any other inclusions or exclusions that you wanted to note?
Well, the only thing I had was Harden at number 1.
Okay.
And now I ended up writing about Giannis and how like his Herculean effort is basically just as good as Harden's, but I do feel like there's gonna be a point where we realize that Harden is doing something that like nobody has done since Wilt Chamberlain, and we're gonna look back on it, and if we don't give him the MVP, it's gonna be a travesty.
God damn it.
Are you for Harden or against?
I'm actively against Harden. I just don't like watching him play basketball.
Yeah, but the results, I'm saying, like, do you...
Well, then, like, what's the point? I'll watch baseball then and just worry about results. Like, everything will be like, well, the swing plane was like this, you know, like.
I can't cape for him like on an aesthetic value. I think he gets knocked for that more than he should, because like some of the step backs are incredible and most of the things I want to see are just like shots that shouldn't go in but do
sure.
go in. And he does that pretty much like 10 times a game.
Yeah.
I just find like what he's done with his streak of 30 games is just like something I've never seen before. And that supersedes any sort of like manufacturing of points with fouls. And
yeah.
Stuff.
I mean, I think that that's fair. And I'm not trying to say like that there's some sort of like hocus pocus going on with what he's doing. What he's doing is remarkable. I just think that watchability and aesthetics matter, mm-hmm. you know, and that's, I think that's exactly why people don't like Russ, is they don't like the aesthetics of his game. They don't like the watchability of his game. They think that he is actively like a bad team basketball player, which I get sometimes. I also think is like kind of missing the point, which is like, if anything, he probably cares too much about wins. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he cares too much about what's happening on like a Wednesday night against Memphis and screw shit up because he tries too hard and does too much,
yeah.
Then it is that he's like coasting, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's interesting to pair some of these guys that ended up on our list. It's essentially what I did when I was trying to like figure out spots.
Yeah.
Like Westbrook and Simmons are actually really similar.
Yes.
And the way I kind of like separate the two is basically saying that Russ is Simmons, but he takes all the shots that Simmons won't.
Yeah.
Even though it's a bad idea. Like, there's something about, like, the fact that he's willing to take those.
Like, if they basically, like, merged those two players, like, if Russ had Simmons's trepidation about shooting and Simmons had Russ's fearlessness or, like, a willingness to make a fool of himself,
mm-hmm.
they'd probably both be better off.
Yeah. I mean, Russ is reckless. Ben is just, like, a steely, like, emotionless robot.
Right.
So, but I did think it was interesting, having said that, about Harden, ultimately. Like, if Giannis continues to hit three-pointers, he's on course for a 30-12 season, which, like, hasn't happened since Moses Malone. So while I think Harden's, like, personal successes are way flashier, like, there's something to be said about
it. I think also it's going to be a really interesting narrative. I can't remember the last time we had back-to-back MVP. Did LeBron do that?
It's probably
Steph.
Oh, it was Steph,
right. Jesus. It has been a long 10 years.
Are any of these guys that didn't make it, like, you had, but didn't make the list? Because the ones that I see are just the two Spurs guys, Marcus Aldridge, DeMar DeRozan.
Let me check.
There's something about Kyle Lowry making it in the last spot I thought was appropriate, just because I think he's really important to what that Raptors team is this year, even though the numbers are like among some of his lowest since he joined that team. But I don't know. I think the Spurs have been a pleasant surprise, so I wish they had been like represented. I think Aldridge was in the field until like the last ballot came in.
I didn't have any Spurs on mine. I had Siakam on mine, and he didn't make the list. I think
it's your guy.
Danny, that was like an insane, like the last 2 days kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like he scored like 40 points the other night, and I was just like, you're on there.
We got Klay in, but no Draymond.
Okay.
Which I think is appropriate. I don't know. Klay's in this weird zone where he's not playing as well as he has in years past, but he's still like on a team that's probably going to win a fourth finals.
Yeah, I think it'll be really cool to see a post-Durant Warriors, because I'll be interested to see what Klay looks like on the other side of it. Draymond, I think, is just like, unfortunately, maybe on the downside of his career.
I don't even think he's averaging 10 points a game.
Yeah, and I just think physically is like got to like compensate for a diminished physicality with like screaming at people, basically.
Right.
Which might work 3 nights a week, but I'll be fascinated to see what happens. Like, they just go full Splash Brothers on the other side of the mountain.
Yeah, Kevin O'Connor had this in his piece about Steph last week, where if those shots that Durant was taking are distributed to Steph and Klay, there's a chance that Steph could be Harden, just more efficient.
Yeah.
Which
that's pretty cool.
Great.
Yeah, and then they get Giannis in 2 years.
Right.
Anything else you wanted to touch on from this? Gobert jumped probably the most. He went from off the list to 14.
Yeah, how did he not make an all-star team?
I don't know. He cried about it.
He does do that a lot. I mean, Kemba dropping so much, I think, was inevitable. Like, he had a really good start to the season, but they really didn't do much to help him. And I think that team is suffering as a result. And like some of his numbers are as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much you could do on like trying to be Harden when you're not.
Kyrie moved up, even though I bet Kyrie's Q rating is down.
Yeah.
But I think as he's like kind of defined himself as clearly the best player on that team, if maybe not in the non-Giannis in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, they basically the way I described it in the piece was that objectively they play better with Kyrie on the floor. Subjectively, things seem to fit better without him.
Right. I mean, you could make I would make the argument that Embiid's a bigger deal than Kyrie at this point, but
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, he beat Dame.
Yeah,
which I thought was pretty appropriate. Just I mean. The Celtics' success is measured in contrast to like what we expected of them, but like they've still been pretty good. Drew got in at 16. I think there's like just this appreciation for him.
Yes,
and it's not even like just Ewing theory.
It's the guy who like stays on the deck of the Titanic.
Right, he's playing his violin.
Yeah. So yeah, okay. Well, you can check out the top 25 on theringer.com. We'll have stuff for you all week in this somewhat down week of NBA. But something tells me that the NBA will not let us sleep easy this week, even though there's not games. I mean, I just think that there will be some controversy, off-court controversy. We have podcasts all week for you guys to listen to. Mismatch on Tuesday, group chat on Thursday with Justin. Friday, the Corner 3 will be back. And Sunday night, just to give you guys a heads up, we have a bunch of stuff happening. The True Detective finale is happening that night, so Concepcion and I will be live afterwards doing the Flat Circle, and we'll have a big picture for you live that night, or not live, but shortly after the Oscars. So, exciting weekend. Basketball's back on Thursday. Until next time, this is Heat Check.